You've landed here at episode 349. When we talk about self-love or loving everything, how do you feel? Do you roll your eyes and think, ugh, these woo-woo hippies? Or do you feel drawn to the idea of loving yourself again and loving everything and everyone around you? In today's episode, we have a deep conversation that goes on many random spiritual and philosophical tangents about how empathetic people engage with the world and how you can develop your own ability for empathy. We talk about money trauma and why people have bad relationships with getting and keeping money. We talk about the evolution of consciousness, whether or not we should detach from our ego, seeing Mother Earth existing as a sentient being, and we've also got some thoughts on climate change that might just piss you off a little bit. There's some big ideas and concepts and all sorts of levels of conversation, and you'll need to bring an open mind to the table to actually benefit from the wisdom that's shared in this episode. And on that note, let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? It's another day in paradise over here, and we're having a crack at dominating life before it dominates me with a mid-afternoon nap. Sadly, I don't do coffee at all, so I'll definitely be napping. But anyway, in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. And now I want to introduce you to a friend of mine that not too long ago was at a party that I hosted here at my house with maybe the biggest charcuterie board you've ever seen. And we were celebrating the success of this amazing podcast. And so we thought it ought to be time that we get this wonderful woman into your ears. So I'd like you to meet my good friend, Rebecca Saar. Now, Rebecca is a lot of things. Not only is she a great conversationalist that has absolutely zero hesitation to push back at my thoughts and ideas, which I really respect. And when we do kind of talk, we go round and round and round down the rabbit hole. But aside from spending all of her spare time chatting to me, she also holds a PhD in the area of, and give this a few moments to sink in, a PhD in the anthropology of consciousness. The anthropology of consciousness. She did that PhD and the last decade of work with a focus on embodiment, spirituality of music and rhythm, human potential, and the spiritual awakening process. Now, before hanging out in the world of energetics, resonance, and consciousness, she was a human rights lawyer. And somewhere in the world of fighting the system for fair treatment of human beings, that's actually kind of how we met in a weird way. And the specifics are a rabbit hole for another day. So that's a bit of a teaser for you there. All of this led Rebecca to founding the Quantum Empathy Technique, which is what we're going to talk about today, which is a profound healing and awakening method based on the principles of empathetic resonance. And without further ado, Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Maddie. It's lovely to be here.
It's so lovely to have you here. It's weird. You're like here again at my house, but not here again at my house.
Yeah, with no access to the food.
I know. Where's the charcuterie board? We're going to need Natty for that.
That was delicious.
Totally. So let's break down what it is you do, because it's like you and I have had a bunch of conversations about it, and I've sort of, you know, followed links and different things that you've sent me. But what is empathetic resonance and quantum empathy technique? Like, what is it?
Oh, well, it's an incredible healing and awakening process that works with the principle of resonance. So emotional resonance, empathetic resonance is essentially how humans connect. So when we are together, how do we feel each other? In the West, there's a hierarchy between mind and body and thought and emotion, so reason and emotion. And we often prioritize our mental processes. But the human experience is full of feelings. It's full of emotions. And we have intelligent bodies that can feel and process not only our own emotions, but the emotions of others. And so quantum empathy technique is a process whereby we go quantum with our emotions. We go quantum with our empathy. And according to the technique, there are four types of empathy. So we have the cognitive empathy, which is used a lot in business leadership. So you can basically, it's also known as perspective taking, and you can place yourself in the shoes of another from a reasonable position. And this is important because to understand another's plight is part of the full spectrum of empathy. But we move into affective empathy, which is like an emotional empathy. And this is where we get into people talking about themselves as highly sensitive or empathic, an emotional sponge, when someone can walk into a room and kind of feel the energy of the room. But it doesn't have to be like a special people that do this. When we go to a wedding, for example, and everybody's dancing and it's joyful and happy, we also feel that joy. We also feel that happiness. But when we go to a funeral, on the other hand, apart from our own feelings, we can feel that there's a sadness, there's a heaviness in the room. And so affective empathy is the kind of true empathy that people talk about when they speak about empathy. And this is a human aspect that everybody, every single person in the world can access. And then we look at compassionate empathy, and compassionate empathy is compassion. And for a QET practitioner, it involves the cognitive affective process. So we first feel the emotions of the other, and we then, because I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's research being done now that has shown that the heart is actually like a brain of its own. So it actually has around 40,000 neurons and sends signals up to the brain just as the brain sends signals down.
Yeah, we've actually had the president, or CEO, maybe the president of Heart Math on the podcast before.
Oh, amazing. Well, he would have told you all about that.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Yes. And potentially they would have mentioned that the heart also has rhythm patterns. And these rhythm patterns change according to a person's emotions. And there can be a greater coherence in rhythm patterns with the, let's say, the lighter emotions, such as happiness, joy, gratitude. And with the heavier or more difficult emotions that we tend to experience, there is a less of a coherence in the rhythm patterns. And so from a QET perspective, these rhythm patterns and all of the heart-brain activity associated then communicate to the brain, and we have this effective cognitive process that creates an compassionate response whereby the person is able to transcend their own feelings around the situation and simply have an unattached desire to help the other. And so that could be even just in helping the other person to feel better by gifting good energy, for example. And so then from that compassionate perspective, we can move on to quantum empathy. And this is where things get really trippy.
We like trippy.
Yeah. And this is what the QET is based on. In QET sessions, we guide the client into an altered state, and we can then access more of the person's conscious field. So not only the conscious field, but the subconscious and the superconscious as well fields. And as we do that, we can tap into that which may not be accessible in the everyday walking world. So the empathy has the capacity to go quantum, if you will. And that's based on a couple of aspects of quantum physics. One is being entanglement and non-locality. So for example, distance healing is very connected to the theory of entanglement, that two particles can impact each other from large distances. And then we also look at string theory. So whether these connections at this point in science's evolution are merely metaphorical or whether they can be proven is up for grabs, but it's useful to look at these theories to explain what is actually happening in the practice.
I'm curious, as you described there, just thinking of all of these terms that might be new to people, What exactly do you mean when you say quantum? Like, does that simply mean that the empathy has multiple states of existence or resonance? And what is the capacity of the individual to access all of those levels? Is that what you mean by quantum? It's like multiple tiered? Or is it more like, you know, I'm basically sitting next to you, illiterate in this world? You know, things that are popping to mind when I hear the word quantum in the world of energetics is like family lineage and generational trauma and things like that. So can you sort of clarify what is meant by quantum in this context?
Yeah, for sure. I would love to do that. And as I was just mentioning, string theory is a really interesting theory to bounce off for this. So according to, and there are different types of string theory, but according to superstring theory, there are 10 dimensions, and dimensions 5+ basically incorporate possibility, potentiality, and include everything that can ever be.
That's a lot.
Yes. And so this is where where we go. What we can actually access through QET is limitless. So we can go into intergenerational aspects of ourselves. And I just completed a program whereby I worked with the chakras as portals to infinite consciousness. And so when I tapped into the root chakra, which is the red chakra, we called it the red portal, we actually tapped into the ancestral lineage, because the root chakra is all about embeddedness in the earth, in our lineage. And what we looked at is the trauma of the mother, because the mother is also Mother Earth. But the trauma of the mother and how that's intertwined with the love of the mother through the generations, and how this work can help to untangle the trauma from the love so that it's pure love. And so it's very powerful, the technique. We can heal 7 generations before and 7 generations to come with our own personal work.
Wow.
Yes.
And when you say tap into the maternal lineage, how do you know you're going 7 layers deep? How do you know? And why not 8?
Why not 8? Well, if you want, we can go 8.
7's just a good marketing number.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody loves 7, right? So we could actually tap into 7. I've tapped into the number 2 before and gone out into the the quantum realm of 2, which was an interesting experience. But it's just an example of how everything has its own conscious field. If consciousness is the stuff that everything is made of, for example, if consciousness is what gives rise to matter, then consciousness is actually a part of it all. So, and it, the ancient traditions all speak of this. Everything comes from the one, and the sound could be the first. So Om is the primordial sound, and then everything grows from that. And it's so interesting that string theory, from my perspective, from the QET perspective, actually resonates with this so deeply. But we can go even deeper than ancestral trauma and family lineage. We can go into our own soul's lineage, which is our Akashic records, our past lives, and the trauma associated with our past deaths. So I do this quite regularly. I hold space for people and tap into a lifetime that is impacting on their current situation today. And so, for example, I had a client who, oh, this is a great one because it brings in the consciousness of the body as well. So mm-hmm. I had a client who came to me and he said when he was born, he had a spot on his liver, like a lump. Mm-hmm. And it was benign, but it was a fairly traumatic experience for his parents because he had to spend time in hospital and all the rest. And he asked me about it. And so we tapped into the consciousness of the liver and asked it what it was trying to tell us through its physical expression. And what came through is that in a previous lifetime, he was in a position where he wasn't able to express his anger. And because he's in an altered state, as I'm speaking this through empathic resonance, he was actually having visions of himself as a fighter pilot in a war, and he experienced his death, which was very intense for him. And he died with the anger inside of him. And so the lump on his liver was almost like an impression that had crossed over into this lifetime and was impacting on his current situation. And so once he'd processed that experience and felt the emotions of his death and processed those and also came to peace with the anger, he came to understand that he could actually channel his anger in this lifetime and use it for for good. And that was part of his soul's evolution in this lifetime.
Yeah, wow. I'm just sort of framing this world that you're describing. And by this world, I mean entering into this space that probably many of the listeners are new to as well.
Yeah.
And it's like what I think about is like when you read a fantasy novel, and I'm really into fantasy, which is not, I'm not saying that this is fantasy. I'm saying that you start to learn the rules of the universe of the book that you're entering or the movie that you're about to watch. And so I'm trying to frame that up in my head for what you're talking about. So fundamentally, the idea that we've got multiple deaths or multiple lives, is this built on the universal rule from this perspective that we all have one soul that just goes through many physical manifestations over time that is our lineage?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, if we're going to look at this as a book, which is a beautiful analogy, we can see that everything started from the one. That was like the first chapter.
The one.
Yeah, the one.
Was it Neo?
Yeah, it was Om. Om.
Gotcha.
Just a simple Om. Yes. And so basically consciousness began because the singularity wanted to know itself. And so from my work, I have gathered the information that the first split between the one was the masculine and the feminine. And that's the divine masculine and the divine feminine.
That was the first division in wanting to know itself.
Yes.
Interesting.
That is beautiful because it's a dance throughout the ages.
Yeah.
And we express it in the dance between women and men, but it's also the dance within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The divine feminine, the divine masculine within ourselves.
Right.
And then from there, the divisions continue, obviously, into the amazing diverse universe, multiverse that we experience today. And it continues and continues. You see, the evolution of our world is just at light speed with the technology that we're experiencing and just interconnectivity. It's amazing. And we are actually, you know, creating this. And so the souls, like as individuals, are also part of the one. And so actually you are just a mirror of me as I'm a mirror of you.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean we would not all have the same reflections looking back if we're all connected to the same source?
Yeah, we could. We could.
God.
So you could be Jesus.
Somebody accused me not long ago after I did an episode debunking the vegan documentary that was out this year and called me a cult leader. So you've just cemented that.
You could also be Hitler.
Oh, shit. I don't want to be either of those guys.
Well, this is part of the spiritual experience to understand ourselves as reflections of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we take it like a fantasy novel, I suppose, like if you do a choose your own adventure.
Oh, goosebumps. Bring it back.
Yeah, right? We've got the choose your own adventure, but we've also got the analogy of a game.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's all a game, then the ultimate win is to love the self from every possible aspect. And we think of self-love as like, okay, I need to like the parts of my body that I think aren't perfect or the parts of my mind that feel really dark. But it actually goes beyond that. If we are simply reflections of each other, how do we love everything? Knowing that it's part of ourselves. So how do we love ourselves as that which seems unlovable? Because it's easy to love like a fluffy rabbit, right?
Yeah.
But how do you love a great white shark?
Or a great white shark or a crocodile? Yeah.
The redback. So many examples in Australia.
Yeah, there really are. Yeah.
So it's a fascinating journey when you start to look at life from this perspective. It literally becomes like a game. Like, how do I level up? How do I overcome my anger or my hatred or, you know, despising of this which seems so abhorrent to me? How do I give up judgment of all of it and just have compassion for all, like unconditional love?
One of the things I feel challenged by in some of these conversations, and maybe you and I have already tapped on it in some of our one-to-one conversations, but it's like the loss of identity with, like, the more things you accept and love, it's like you're dissolving your own identity because everything becomes the same. And then that brings up a question for me, which is, if I just love everything and everything's okay and everyone's fine, how do I explain specific attachment or love for an individual, like a romantic love? Or how do I discern the difference between, it's like I could be in a relationship with literally any human if I love everything abundantly forever.
Why not?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm an open-minded guy, but because it sounds like the end of that road of loving everything unconditionally, no matter what reflection of you is in it, dark, colorful, happy, sad, depressing, violent, whatever it is, that the goal is to end up just unattached to absolutely everything and egoless.
That's a really good question. It's not such a goal to give up the ego because we're in it. We're experiencing it, right? So, but it's to have the capacity to do that. And that's what we do in QET. So in quantum empathy technique, I go into an altered state and I channel the most beautiful love and I share the most beautiful wisdom. And then I jump out and then I go and like do the dishes.
Do you love the dishes though? That's the important question.
I do.
Of course you do.
It was amazing. One session I channeled this beautiful information about the washing machine. About how the washing machine cleans clothes and the symphony of the dirt and the water, like the earth, like the earth element and the water element coming together to like clean stuff. I mean,
it's amazing.
If you can look at life like that, you're winning, right?
Absolutely. I'm going to look at my washing machine very differently after this conversation. with a hint of romance.
And remembering that you might have once been a washing machine.
Well, that brings up a good question. So I heard this theory on consciousness, I don't know how long ago, by this astrophysicist. And it was the idea that consciousness is actually a particle that we haven't discovered that is just attached to all things. And so what that brings up for me is, does something that isn't biological, does that have consciousness? Like the washing machine, right? Because, and maybe the argument is, well, it was all in the earth once, we mined it, we mined the metal, we mined the, you know, all the parts for the wire and the copper and all that kind of stuff. So it is maybe part of the earth. I don't know. But can non-biological things be conscious?
Well, that's a good question. It's a good question for AI as well.
Yeah. As in, we should ask AI? Let's just open ChatGPT right now.
It probably knows more than us, so let's ask it.
It probably does. But what's your thought? Like, what do you think about non-biological things having consciousness?
Well, I kind of feel that what you said, you almost answered your own question in saying that the elements come from the earth. So the metal comes from the earth. Mm-hmm. If we look at the clothes, the dirt on the clothes comes from the earth.
Well, the cotton comes from the earth. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything comes from the earth to begin with, which is also really fascinating when we look at the earth's evolution and how the landscape has changed. For example, we never, you know, when earth was born, there were, you know, dinosaurs, but after that, there were not skyscrapers. The metal was not outside, you know, on top. It was just all completely different, like the roads and everything. If you actually look at how much the surface of the earth has changed because of human influence, it blows the mind. But where did all of these materials come from?
The earth.
There's nowhere else. Well, there are other places, but as far as we know, it's coming from the earth. And so it's just a really interesting exercise to consider the earth as a sentient being and look at the earth as evolving as well, as mm-hmm. evolving in its consciousness and what this experience of having its surface completely remodeled and its insides being taken out is like for the earth. From my work, I've received information that it's like a dark night of the soul for the earth. Mm. She's suffering and we are like her children And she loves us like a mother loves her child. Mm-hmm. And to see us fighting the way that we are is so painful, so terribly painful for her.
Mm-hmm.
But she's unable to intervene because she has that kind of unconditional love for us that we're aspiring to.
What popped into mind then is that she's suffering and that she can't do anything about it. My thought instantly went to all of the ice ages, which is Mother Nature doing something about it.
Yes.
And in my current belief, which might change, or my current understanding, maybe belief's the wrong word, there's been many ice ages where the population was massively reduced, and then we kind of had to start again or at a much more limited capacity than we were for the previous century or whatever. And then you think about, you know, asteroids and that's not Mother Earth per se, but it's nature, you know, the universe doing its thing, and then volcanoes and cyclones. Is that not Mother Nature biting back?
Well, it depends on how you look at it, I suppose. How much you want to personify it and mm-hmm. look at those events as intentional from like her perspective,
mm-hmm.
or whether it's just part of her growing process, just as like our bodies grow and we don't necessarily have a say over how they grow or when they grow, when they shift and when they change.
That's kind of like the climate change debate, right? Which is that you've got the people that are saying humans are a cancer and we're destroying the earth and Mother Nature is responding. And then you've got the other people on the other side, which are saying Mother Nature has always done this. We just happen to be here this time.
I'd probably be more in the second camp.
Yeah, I probably would be too. And I'll let Australia Post know that we're about to receive a lot of hate mail for that.
That being said, I do believe that it's almost like there are aspects of what's happening now that are like a direct response from what humans are doing to the earth.
Oh, I totally agree.
It's impossible to take out, like to change the earth as much as humans have changed it in the last, say, 500 years even,
mm-hmm.
without like a physical like cause and effect response happening.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's like this intentional angry mom going, get out of the house. I'm not looking after you anymore.
Yeah. Well, maybe another ice age will come along and that'll be her doing that.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm curious with the quantum empathy technique and like learning to empathize and connect with and understand all things that are a reflection of ourself. What comes to mind is things like hypnosis. And so I'm curious whether it's something like hypnosis that you need to believe in for it to be effective, for it to work. Because, you know, often they ask you that kind of thing, you know, do you believe in it? And then your skeptics will say, well, if you've got to believe in it, then it's not real. Like, you know, it's kind of like religion. You've got to have faith for it to be true. And it's like, well, is it true then?
Yeah. Well, do you believe in empathy?
Well, I'm not a psychopath, so yeah.
Then you believe in it.
Well, easy. Amazing.
Yeah.
So, but if somebody comes to you and they're like, if they've got some kind of problem, what is the process you take them through? Like, what are you trying to get them to go from and to loving parts of themselves or loving things in their life that are currently causing them anger, suppression, you know, problems?
Well, I personally feel that the person comes to me with an intention and I am merely a mirror for their own, like, choose your own adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like a character in their plot.
Yeah, right.
And I'm reflecting that the work that they actually wish to do for themselves. So they wish to go somewhere and be somewhere by the time they finish working with me. And so then I present like, the, you know, in the computer games in the 80s, where it's like, I'm here. And that would be that long spiel about like who this person is and how they're going to help you.
Yes, I do remember those. You had to do so much reading. Yeah.
King's Quest, stuff like that. Yeah, yeah, so much reading. Yeah. And so if we look at resonance and entanglement and all of these kinds of concepts and just look at the actual practical application of that. Say the person is like, I want to solve this problem about finances, and they're on a spiritual path and they've gotten to the point of resonance where they're calling in me. And so then I pop up and they say, oh, you know, I really want to work through my money blocks. And I've had clients that have come to me with that. That may be what they believe they're coming to me for, but they'd usually be coming to me for something much, much deeper. And so we begin and we go into our altered state and we open up the channels for higher communication.
Mm-hmm.
I go through a process. Essentially what I'm doing is channeling. So if you don't believe in channeling, then it still happens because I'm doing it and I believe in it.
So picture this, right? Unlocking your potential, conquering emotional eating, and gaining insights directly from a health and nutrition expert such as myself. That's what we do inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group, which is currently free to join. If you've ever felt trapped by food challenges, struggled with maintaining a healthy lifestyle, or yearned for a community that understands the reasons why you've yo-yo dieted for years, then there's a new chapter waiting to be written. And this is your chance to start writing it by joining us all on Facebook Lives, on engaging posts that push you out of your comfort zone and into growth, and Q&A sessions with me. All of this works as a platform to begin changing your emotional eating problems for good. Oh, and also, as a special gift, you receive my transformative How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook. And that's also for free. I get it. Skepticism might linger. You might think, Maddie, I've heard these ads and I'm not sure. Well, at least a quarter of the members inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group have been paying clients of my emotional eating program at some point over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're not sure, you can post in the group and ask to find out if I'm the real deal or not. It's totally up to you. To join us in the free Healthy Mums Collective and to end your emotional eating and feel good in your own skin and begin that journey, pop down to the show notes below, click the link and breeze through 3 simple entry questions. Join today and let's embark on a journey of growth and empowerment. The link is in the show notes below. Yeah, yeah. And you are just a reflection of people that don't believe. So
that's right.
It's all true. Everything's true.
Yeah, I'm reflecting the opposite and challenging that belief.
Mm.
Because it's a computer game and the challenges come up, or it's a book.
This feels like it enters the space of like light languages.
Mm. Well, actually, I translate light languages. I go beyond that. I translate them into English.
Oh, really? That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Actually, can we clarify for anybody listening what light languages are? Because they might have no idea.
Okay, well, I have a different opinion to most.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. So many people feel that they're like languages from... You really want to bring in the aliens, yeah? He was saying beforehand, let's talk about aliens.
Yeah, Rebecca said, like, how far out there are we going to go? And I literally just said, let's go aliens, like, as far as we can. And we've ended up here.
It's a resonance intention.
Yeah, right.
And I don't necessarily disagree with this. People say that, you know, it's, oh, I'm contacting aliens and aliens are talking to me and I'm, like, channeling their language. Okay. But from my perspective, it's the way that the body processes energy.
Mm-hmm.
So the body is actually processing energy through the voice, through the movement mm-hmm. of the vocal cords, and through the voice, through the energy of the sound. And so because I, well, empathic telepath, I translate that. Mm-hmm. So that just makes me sound like a little bit, yeah, like as out there as the alien people.
But you've got a PhD, so it's totally fine.
Exactly. I can get into the science of telepathy for you. But essentially what my skill is, when I spoke before about effective empathy, so mm-hmm. I have a high propensity for effective empathy. And everybody is empathic or empathetic. Everybody has the capacity for effective empathy. As I said before, we can all feel the emotions of a room when it's happy. We can all feel it when it's sad. We know the difference between a party and a funeral, right? Yeah. Without our own feelings being in it. That being said, when we go through the heart is what I believe is processing that effective experience. And because the heart is intelligent, and it's working with the nervous system, it sends signals up the nervous system to the brain, and then the brain cognizes this. And so through this process. So if you think about how do we think? How do we create language? Do we just do it as a process in the brain, or does it come through like an emotional thought process? So do we have emotions and then we have the thoughts? And so if we think about that, we're already translating our emotions. So we're already translating our own emotions. So if I am feeling another's emotions and then I'm doing the same process, I can translate it into words.
Right. Gotcha. And that makes sense. I mean, they talk about that in habit formation all of the time, that, you know, an emotion leads to a thought and a thought leads to a behavior, or a response that then leads to a behavior. So I think, yeah, that makes, you know, pretty good sense to me. But does that mean that thought always comes second to emotion?
Well, it's an integrative process.
Mm-hmm.
It's an integrative process. And I mean, the research that I did in my PhD was around embodiment.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually looked at capoeira, which is an Afro-Brazilian martial art.
Yeah.
And I looked at the intelligence of the body. Yeah. and a lot of the research was saying that the body comes first, the affective experience comes first, and then the cognitive processes come second. So I looked at embodied cognition as well.
This is exactly what, not everything you've said, but what you just said there, that the body comes first, is exactly the idea behind Matthew Zoltan's work. He's been on the podcast before as well. He was a monk for a long time and did all of these different things, and he ended up at the place where he was like, the physical is all that matters because it's the thing responding to the environment, and then it comes, then comes interpretation, conditioning, and thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But the body always has the truth.
Yes, yeah. And in my work, what I've come to understand is that there is a synergistic process between our four wisdom centers, being the body, the mind, the heart, and the soul. So these are the main wisdom centers of our human experience. And what we are doing, especially in the West, is we are prioritizing the mental, which I mentioned towards the start. We're prioritizing the mental, and we have this hierarchical understanding of the mind-body experience. And the mind comes first, and the body is almost like the servant of the mind. But in the QET experience, it's actually the soul who leads the group. And the heart provides almost like the doorway to the soul. And the body is the translates the messages of the soul, which then works up towards the mind. So it's a fascinating shift in perspective to look at our human cognitive processes as not only embodied, but also heart and soul led, heart influenced and soul led.
In this world of this sort of conversation, what comes up for me is I think about all of these communities I've been around, which are very spiritual and are very personally developed, let's say. And I can't help but just see different layers of soul connection and heart-centered stuff as just another layer of like spiritual arrogance, or it feels very ego-based because now it's like a bit of a cult online and you've got these wellness communities everywhere that are all about heart-centered and blah, blah, blah. And so much of it is just used for spiritual gaslighting, spiritual arrogance, commitment issues showing up in using the sentences, oh, my, it's not aligned with my soul. And it's like, no, you just don't know how to have difficult conversations. Like, and I actually see this a lot. And I've started to withdraw from some of those communities because I feel like actually it's just a lot of broken people hiding behind a really beautiful facade. And so I wonder, like, at what point do you know you've reached the soul layer and it's not just another layer of ego?
That's a really good question. Do you feel like it's aligned with your soul to do this podcast?
Yeah, because I think you're awesome.
To do the podcast in general.
Yeah, I guess so. But I don't know how to answer that because I feel soul illiterate. That's why I'm asking the question. I'm like, I don't know. How will I know? What are the determining feelings or factors that I'd be like, oh, that's right?
That's a really good question. We could always, you know, tap in and find out. But to begin with, I gather a lot of information through my sessions, a lot of wisdom. And For starters, the soul is always whole. So no matter what the person is going through, no matter what the body is going through, no matter, you know, how sad or broken or misaligned we feel, there's a part of ourselves that is always whole. And the heart, as I said, is a doorway to the soul. In the most recent program that I ran, when we looked into the heart chakra, it came through that the heart opens a doorway to the soul, which is a whole dimension in itself. So our soul is like a whole dimension in itself, and it's a dimension of light. And the process of connecting with the soul in this lifetime is to connect with our own light and to bring through that beauty. So it could be, for example, connecting with your higher self. It could be just stepping into that space of love that brings you to tears for yourself, because it's just so beautiful. And this is a part of life that so many people are overreaching for, because it's been such a barren space for so many for so long. And one of the other things that has come through, which makes so much sense, is that our addictive behaviors represent to us our craving to get back in touch with our soul. And so we're almost trying to substitute our connection with our soul with our addictions to coffee, our emotional eating, alcohol, drugs, even money, the pursuit of like constant pursuit of wealth that makes us so like robots in the West. This is all substitution for the lack of connection with our soul. And that can be found just by stepping out into nature, just by looking at the sunshine and hearing the birds and just reveling in that beauty and connecting with the sound and connecting with the light.
Yeah, we've definitely lost a lot of that with sitting in front of screens and being inside all of the time and, you know, wearing all of the clothes. And I say that because it's, you know, just more time that our body's not in contact with the sun, which, you know, there's loads of science behind circadian rhythms and circadian biology and our blood sugar and our cravings and our protein metabolism and all of those things. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the reason that I moved to the place that I'm in now, is that I was in an apartment building, you know, not far from the city. And even though it was a great space, it just never felt right. And I was like, oh, is this because I was a country kid? But now I'm in a house that's like, even looking out the window right now, there's all I can see is green trees. There's a backyard. And every time I have a break, I can go straight to the backyard and just spend like 5 minutes just like, ah, you know, no phone, none of that. But yeah, I think we're particularly devoid of that connection with nature. And a lot of people go on holidays to get back into nature. Mm. You know, they get on a plane and go to Bali, or they go to the Amazon or Costa Rica or whatever, wherever it is. But fundamentally, it's that disconnection from, you know, the busyness of their life. And so I think you raise a really good point in that, you know, it's so easily accessible. We could just walk outside.
That's it. Yeah. So I believe that you actually listened to your soul and you went somewhere greener because your soul was desiring it. And your heart was speaking it.
Oh, so much.
Your heart was speaking it. And it spoke it to your mind, who said, I think I'm going to move.
Yeah.
And you did it.
And I'm so happy I did. Yeah.
Even though your apartment was cool.
It was. But we've upgraded.
That's it. And so much of our anxiety in this world is actually just the tiredness of the mind. The mind is tired from taking the reins the whole time. From overthinking, and constantly being in that control tower. And so when we let the mind rest and we just let the soul speak through the heart, then we can create such beauty in the world. You create such beauty in our own world. And then we, you know, we raise our vibration because we're happier. We're happier. And then we create more happiness in the world just by being happier ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, with this idea of happiness and love and connection, and sort of going back to the start of our conversation with the initial split of consciousness wanting to know itself being masculine and feminine, the idea of love and kindness and happiness feels to me inherently like feminine, generally feminine ideas. And so
men are like, screw that shit.
Well, because you would generally associate love and happiness and joy with more feminine experience. And then you would, you know, grit and, you know, power and aggression with more masculine, both of which can obviously cross into the other. But is the idea that we all end up as, in theory, sort of meditating monks that just love everything and then everything's peaceful and amazing? Because there's always, does love win, basically, is the question. Because in a world where, you know, we're trying to love everything into submission, I feel like the aggression and the violence and the anger of the world, it's always going to be there. And sometimes that needs to be met with the same intensity. Because just loving your violent abuser because it's a reflection of yourself doesn't solve the problem.
Well, what if you understand your violent abuser to the point where they completely transform?
So they have no responsibility in their transformation. It's up.
It's almost like Care Bears. Or Rainbow Bright. Do you remember Rainbow Bright?
No, I don't.
Murky Dismal. It's like, well, that's kind of the theory. Look, I mean, these kinds of things, they don't happen overnight. And, okay, we'll take it back to the soul's purpose. Of course, that our soul has intentions for this lifetime. But as I said, there's a part of our soul that is that's always whole. And if we think of it, each and every one of us has a soul. And the heart is the doorway to that, to the soul. And the soul is pure light. It's pure beauty. There's nothing beyond that beautiful aspect and that light aspect. And it's when we come into the realm. So our soul's desire to come into the realm of materiality to experience separation. So when we look at light, light is just light. And so when we look at the souls as light, it's just light. And there's very few places in the universe where we can actually experience separation and materiality as we do, which is very, very actually jarring for the soul.
Right.
And for some, that experience leads to a closing of the heart. It leads to a closing of the heart and the soul can no longer get through. The soul is kind of distant. So far distant that it's no longer heard. And the heart is so closed that it can no longer speak. And then we're operating from only one, potentially, or two of the wisdom centers of our entire being.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we love another, if we think of the hearts as almost like sutured closed, the sutures start to pop like this, pop, 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 pop. And the beauty of the heart and the light of the soul begins to shine through. Now, this breaking of the sutures and the opening of the heart is not necessarily not a painful process. It can be really traumatic. It's a wound. It's a wound opening and all of the pus and everything can just be coming out and it's painful, it's ugly, but hearts don't actually break. They shatter into a million pieces and that's where the light comes through. And so when the heart is sutured open and it shatters, then the light of the soul explodes out. And this is physics. This is simple physics. And so if there's any aim, if anybody has an aim on this earth other than just experiencing the material plane in all of its weirdness and magic, then it could be to open up the hearts of those who've been closed.
So our heart's purpose or our soul's purpose is to shatter our hearts.
Shatter the hearts of everyone.
Oh, that's brutal. Yeah, I mean, I understand and I follow like with what you're saying, which then gives rise to the whole purpose of trauma and suffering.
Yes.
Because you've got to shatter the hearts for the soul to come through.
That's right. And who better to start with than the self?
Well, I mean, I don't think many people started shattering their own heart, but I think a lot of people had their hearts shattered.
That's right. And so if you didn't have your own heart shattered, if those of us didn't experience like childhood traumas or relationship breakups or things that have hurt us so deeply that we've almost transcended our own ego, we've experienced ego death in a way.
Mm-hmm.
If we hadn't experienced that, then where would we be? Where would we be? Would you be exploring what you're exploring now?
Yeah.
Would I be exploring what I'm exploring now?
Definitely not.
No. And so we see the beauty in the darkness. We see the beauty in the fear. We see the beauty in the trauma. We see the wisdom that it brings through. Because a lot of healers talk about, you know, we want to break through the blocks and succeed and get to the places we want to be. But for me, I see that there's so much wisdom held in these blockages, these trauma knots. They're almost like universes within themselves. So we tap into this universe, we dive in and explore, and it's like, what's the wisdom that's held in these spaces? What can it teach us about being here, this experience that is temporary? We're not staying here, we're just passing through.
Where are we passing through to?
Back to the soul space. Back to the light.
Back to the light. Or do we just go, we're just reincarnated, and then as soon as we die, we're just born into another body?
Well, the trippy thing is, like, it's all non-linear as well. So you could be in, like, multiple different bodies in multiple different dimensions as we speak.
That's both terrifying and exciting to think about.
Yeah. And this is where the spiritual ego comes in, because people start a spiritual awakening process and they download this information about them being like, you know, some like king or queen or like galactic warrior. And like they get attached to that aspect of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, like, if we look at because the yogic traditions and the Hindu traditions have so much to offer us in terms of our like understanding of spirituality. We have the koshas, or the body realms. So we have the physical body, we have the energetic body, we have the emotional, mental, and causal body. And there are different ways that people interpret these. So yeah, but this is basically what it is. And within the emotional realm, I believe there's the astral realm. And so the astral realm is the realm of the imagination. So anything we imagine exists in that realm.
Ooh.
Yeah. And if we look at the theory of oneness, we are a part of everything and everything is a part of us, then of course we can be anything we imagine. There are energies that we channel into this lifetime. So for example, we can channel in the energy of the warrior when we're doing our exams, for example. From then, we can be in another dimension. We could be like, you know, fighting in a war of like health, justice, or peace, or something like that. You know, it's, and these things, it's all become so holographic and so malleable once we get to the level of consciousness where anything can actually be anything. And this is where we start to detach from the pain and suffering, like really actually detach from a lot of the pain and suffering, or what would cause us pain and suffering in this lifetime, not by escaping into like this idea that I'm actually like a queen of like some spiritual like cult in another realm, but like the idea that like this is not our only aspect of ourselves. We're multidimensional beings. We are all multidimensional beings. This is the aspect of ourselves that is here on earth in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have so many other aspects of ourselves that are like, we have the soul, which is a dimension unto itself that's living its life, living its best life in the realm of light. And it's projecting into our experiences here, or we are a projection of it in the body, in the flesh, and it feels like we're material, but we're actually, you know, actually just a projection of what we believe is true.
For me, it sounds like a mission of untethering my life experience primarily to the physical, like untethering myself, mm-hmm. because that's really the desire of the ego, I think, to physically experience everything, the money, the cars, you know, all of the things that my ego and my dopamine wants. We mm-hmm. want it all in the physical.
Yeah. But even I had such an interesting experience with money these last couple of years, because I've gone on the money healing journey and mm-hmm. I've looked at the reasons why I was so intrigued by gift economy, for example. And so I didn't realize it at the time, but almost anti-money, anti-capitalist, anti-economy as it now stands. And I wrote down all the reasons why, and it started at the global, you know, the injustices that it's perpetuated, the global inequality, what I've seen in my career, slavery, like the list kind of goes on. But it came down right into the personal, is that, you know, it took my dad away from me when I was young because he was stressed. He was working out late at night. He was going away for work. Like, it took that presence away from me. And what I realized is that it's actually almost taken every man in my life away from me.
Yeah, wow.
Money has that capacity, but it was one perspective of why I was having these experiences, which have actually shaped my life in such beautiful ways.
Mm.
I did a PhD on decoloniality and consciousness, like the decolonizing of consciousness. And I looked at slavery. I'm very involved in African communities in Australia. My husband is from West Africa. It's shaped my life in the most beautiful of ways. And now it's a time for me to move through that and beyond it. And so my relationship with money is changing, and it's been such a spiritual process. And what I've actually come to understand is that, of course, firstly, it's not actually money itself. It's people's attitudes towards money, and how they see it, how they value it. But the essence of money told me, when I tapped into the consciousness of money, if everything has a consciousness, which we talked about before, money says, but I am a part of you. I'm a part of the whole. If you reject me, you're rejecting a part of yourself. So if the ultimate aim is to love yourself as everything, then I have to also love money as a part of everything.
Yeah.
And so there's a difference between like the egotistical desire to have stuff for like status or to collect things or because to compensate for the lack of connection with the soul. There's a difference between that and actually truly loving money or the car itself or the things that you're collecting as part of everything.
I like that perspective because, yeah, there's so much money trauma and money beliefs and money's evil and you've got to be manipulative to get, you know, lots of it. I had to break through a lot of that myself going on this small business journey and realizing very early on that, yeah, a lot of my money beliefs were rooted in the idea that having too much money is a bad thing and it's only for evil people. Mm. And I had totally had to break down those ideas to be able to receive it. It often kept coming my way. I just found ways to send it back out the door again.
That's right. And then how that doesn't do anybody any good because you can't act from your space of full power. And so people are not receiving you in your full power. And you have so much to gift the world. And so if you're unable to gift that because of these unhelpful attitudes towards money that have been ingrained through generations and generations of experiences of scarcity, so we don't judge that either. We actually understand it and we love that as well. This is how we begin to really tap into our own self-love. And when we love ourselves to the highest possible potential, then we're actually gifting ourselves from our full power. We're gifting ourselves from our highest state. And that's where we can do the best work, if that's what we desire in this lifetime.
Oh, I love it. I love it. For some reason, my podcast doesn't usually go for 3 hours, which is what I think we need to actually go so deep. So obviously you need to come back. But for everybody that's totally vibing with what you're saying, where can they find you online?
Sure. Well, I have a website, www.rebeccasarr.com. I'd also love for people to find me in the QET Facebook group. I have a Facebook group that's dedicated to talking everything QET. And I also have a masterclass coming up. I'm starting a program called Enlightenment, and it's promising no less. It's a foundational course for those who wish to learn more about quantum empathy, and also those who may wish to go on and practice as a QET practitioner in the future. So I'll give you the links to that. There'll be a masterclass coming up in the next week. So sign up and come. And then if you wish to do the Enlightenment program and become enlightened, come join us. We'd love to see you there.
Yeah, amazing. And I'll put all of the links down in the show notes below. So for anybody listening, if you are vibing with this conversation or you're feeling some kind of resonance, which would be totally appropriate, scroll down to the show notes, click the link and jump into Rebecca's world. She's obviously fantastic, and this conversation could quite literally go for an entire weekend probably. So we should do some kind of retreat or event where we just sit and talk.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
But just to wrap up, as is the theme on this show, we like to leave people with one piece of health advice that you wish more people knew about.
Amazing. Okay. So I wish that more people would consider the health of their connection with their soul. So how much do you connect with the wisdom of your own heart, and how open is your heart to connecting with the light of your soul? Because when we connect with our soul and we live from that wisdom, we listen to the soul, which we call intuition. Trust me, everything gets better. We become healthier, miracles happen, and it's a process, but this is where we begin.
I like it. Amazing. Well, thanks for hanging out with me and having this conversation. And we obviously need to do more, because there's so much to unwrap and unravel and dig into and challenge. So, but thanks for hanging out. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. We only just touched on the aliens. So.
No, maybe next time we should start there and see how deep we can get.
It'll be fun.
Oh, amazing. Well, thanks so much for being here, and I'll catch you really soon.
Thank you so much as well. It's a pleasure, an honor.
Bye.
See ya.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.